Good morning and welcome to, or good evening and happy Thanksgiving Day to everybody in the United States. Big day for you tomorrow. All right, well, this is great. I'm going to hand over to Grace shortly for the Module 15. So welcome to Module 15 of ITE 1, Semester 2. But before Module 15, we're going to have the Module 12 quiz. Okay, so everybody with their chat windows open and let's go. Okay, question one. How many active partitions can a hard drive have? This is for Windows. A, 1, B, 2, C, 4, D, 8. Go now. Will you
You've just
take
been
us
dropped in the
on the
lecture
two
theatre,
answers we've got
Bob.
now? Yes, and good evening, Bob. Happy Thanksgiving. We've got three answers.
Thanksgiving.
Okay, for everybody who answered A, you are correct. Question two. Which two file systems can be used by Windows XP? Let's choose two so we can do this as a yes or no. A, DOS. Okay, everybody answering no, you are correct. B,
We're just getting to type
EXP.
them both in. Yeah, get them to type the two in. What are the two, get people to just
Oh,
type the
okay,
two file
well, all right,
systems in.
yeah, we can just do that. Okay.
Yeah,
Okay, is
type
that
it in, guys.
32? Yeah, just type it in. We all know what the answer to this question is.
Absolutely.
It's an easy question anyway. So everybody answering MTFS and FAT32, you are of course correct. Which system tool consolidates files to allow faster access? Okay. Answer A, file attributes. B, computer management. C, defragmentation. And D, disk format. Go now. For everybody answering C, which is defragmentation, you are correct. Okay, how can the last known good configuration option be accessed? A, press the F8 key to access the advanced boot options. B, click Start All Programs, System Tools, and Restore. C, click Start All Programs, Accessories, System Tools, Backup. And D, press the Del key to access the Recovery Console. Go now. Any other takers? Guys, oh, we did better last week on this question. He's actually pressing F8 to access the advanced startup menu to get back the last known good configuration. It is F8. So the person who answered A, you are correct. Unfortunately,
That
everybody
was
else
me.
didn't do so well. It is Kerry. Yeah. Bit of a gotcha here. If your machine has booted up and got to the GUI since the last good configuration has been saved, the keys in the registry will have been overwritten and the last known good configuration will be therefore useless, and it's not really a good option because if you don't know to use it, you often don't use it and you break it by the time you realize you have to use it. But it's there in the test, so you should know about it. Okay, question four, five. A new graphics card is installed in the computer. When the computer is powered on, the default drivers are loaded, but some of the applications do not work properly. What should the user do to improve the graphics card's performance? Option A, check the Microsoft website to find the latest drivers. Check the web B, check the website of the manufacturer to see if there's any later drivers. Configure the application to run correctly with a new graphics card. Or D, configure the graphics card settings in the start menu. Go now. For everybody, which is all of you, 100% answering B, you are correct. That is to check the website of the manufacturer to see if there's any updated drivers. Question six, which is the default Windows update setting? Windows does have a default setting for this. Option A, automatically download updates from my computer and install them. B, download updates for me, but let me choose when to install them. C, notify me, but don't automatically install them. And D, turn off automatic updates. Go now. Very good, everybody. People answering A, which is the whole lot of you, you are correct. That is the default where it will automatically download them and install them. And if you don't think about it and you're using your computer as a jukebox at 3 o'clock in the morning, it will often go off and want to have a reboot. And yes, it's happened to me.
It's also worth pointing out, actually, especially for vision impaired people, that the "Do you wish to restart?" "Yes" is actually the default button. So if you accidentally walk back to your computer and accidentally press the space bar, that will also force it to restart if that dialog's popped up and gained focus. It's one of those dialogs that grabs focus like AVG. So you've got to be careful.
Yep, thanks, Kerry. Last question. Let's do this one. Question seven. Which Windows XP function allows you to roll back to a previous state? Option A, automatic update. B, backup. Oh, no, it says NT backup rather. C, restore point. D, scan rig. Go now. And look at everybody go. That's such an easy one. Yep, it's the old restore point thing. So enjoy restore points. They're good. That is the end of the quiz. And it's over to Grace for chapter 15.
Okay, thank you, Elise. Good quiz. And today, we are going to talk about how to plan a network. And then we'll come back next week and talk about implementing them as well as some other advanced networking topics. So, before we talk about planning a network and building a network, we do have to talk about limitations. We're blind. So, some of the things that we talk about here may not quite apply to us. Some of us may have other physical disabilities. So if something doesn't sound like it's something that would be safe for you to do, don't do it. Maybe getting up on a ladder on top of a big office building is not a good idea for you. So use your common sense. There's a lot of things we can do. We can design networks. Some of us can build cables. Some of us can get up on that big ladder. But you have to think about you and think about what's safe for you to do before you do it. So just think, guys, please. Okay, now on to the lecture. We're going to talk about safety in installing cables. As visually impaired people, we probably won't be installing cables in ceilings, but just in case, and these are also very good idea to be doing when you're in a lab environment working with any type of cables, any kind of dangerous chemicals or any of that. So in any lab environment, it is important to dress properly. Wear sturdy protective shoes, long pants and sleeves, gloves, and safety glasses. Yes, it's important to protect our eyes even though we may not use them, because it would be really horrible to get something lodged into your eyeball. Yes, it still really does hurt. If we're using a ladder, read the labels on the ladder and follow any safety instructions written on it. Never stand on the top rung of the ladder. You can easily lose your balance and fall. Make sure that people in the area know you will be working there. Cordon off the area with caution tape or safety cones, because if you have somebody run into that ladder, you're in trouble. When you're using a ladder that leans up against a wall, follow the instructions written on the ladder and have someone hold the ladder for you to help. Keep the ladder steady. Okay. When working with network cables, make sure that the tools you are using are in good working order. Concentrate on what you are doing and take your time. If you rush when working with cables, you're likely to injure yourself or the cable, which is no good. Make sure that you do not cut yourself or place anyone else in danger. Always wear safety glasses when cutting, stripping, or splicing cables of any kind, because you may have tiny fragments that can injure your eyes, get into your skin, or fly through the air and hurt someone else. Do not touch the bare ends of the cables. Anyone tell me why?
I'll have a guess at it, because they're sharp.
They are sharp. Any other reasons?
If it's a copper cable, if there's an electrical storm, you may there may be electricity that goes through and you may get a shock.
Very possible. And probably will be a little one, but you never know. Also, those ends are very thin and small. You might break off a fragment and get a nice little metal sliver in your hand.
Also, the other reason not to touch the ends of cables is that you may get impurities off your skin that may also impede conductivity, I should say. So that's another reason not to touch the exposed wires of the cable more than absolutely necessary.
What about static discharge?
On network cables, not a huge concern because they're not connected to anything. So you're unlikely to get any voltage through them and stuff. Touching the actual cables, as long as they're not connected to anything, probably isn't going to hurt anyone, because they'll be just, you know, lump of copper, nowhere for the current to go.
Roger, roger.
Also keep in mind that when you're actually crimping, you don't actually strip back the actual individual pairs themselves. You only strip back the outer insulation. You actually leave the insulation on the cables, but I'm sure Grace will cover that later on in the lecture. Or if she doesn't, I refer you to the Discovery One crimping labs that you can all have a listen to and listen to how we crimped up cables.
It says here that you need to wear gloves whenever possible. As blind people, we need to think about gloves and whether they're a good idea or how much they are working on our cables. So there are times when you probably really should wear gloves, and there are times when they really won't be they'll be very much of a hindrance to you.
Well, even with my level of sight, I think it would just frustrate me to wear gloves because I do use my tactile abilities quite well, so I can understand that.
Common sense, guys, but if the test asks you, always wear gloves. Make sure to dispose of any waste properly. If you do have an accident, make sure to get proper care. If you do cut yourself in a dirty environment, which working in some of these spaces can be very... infection is possible without proper sanitation. And if you need help, call another person to help you. Definitely. Very important to have proper sanitation when you do get a cut. Make sure you get it looked at right away because you may be in a very dirty little bits of wires and dust and dirt. So take care of yourselves. I'm just trying to get this microphone to cooperate.
Any questions while Grace is jigging her microphone, or any comments? I've personally found that it's possible for a blind person to crimp coax. However, crimping twisted pair is quite difficult because even sighted people have trouble identifying which colours go where. So you may not be personally involved in crimping a cable, but you may be involved in instructing somebody else how to crimp cables for you. Or you might just go and order a bulk lot of cable on eBay or get it from your cable installer. But we do have to teach the skills in case you do need to use it.
Okay, hopefully that'll be better. You can hear me?
Yep. Yeah, we can.
Cool. Awesome. That'll do it. I'll put it up to 55. Okay, safety concerns when working with fiber optic cable include dangerous chemicals, light that you cannot see that can burn your eyes. Yes, this can still happen to us, and no human can see it. And tools with sharp edges that produce glass splinters. These are in your test, guys, so remember the safety concerns for fiber optic are chemicals, lights that can burn your eyes, and also the tools that can create glass splinters. The glues and solvents that are used in fiber optic cables are dangerous. Read the material safety data sheet, MSDS, and make sure that you know what to do if a problem arises before you begin working with the cables. If you don't know when a problem occurs, you're not going to have very much time to look it up because you're going to want to help whoever is in danger right away. Fiber optic cables emit light that is not visible to the human eye. Make sure to unplug the cable from its light source. And this is especially important for some of us who use magnifiers. It can be very dangerous to use a magnifier when working with fiber optic cable because it magnifies the light directly into your eyes, and that can really damage your eyes. And you may not be able to actually feel it burning into your eyes until it's too late. Any questions or comments on that? The process of cutting and trimming strands of fiber optic cable can produce tiny fragments of glass or plastic that can penetrate your eyes or skin and cause serious irritation. The fibers can be extremely difficult to see on your skin because they are clear and small. When working with fiber optic cabling, the work surface should be a dark mat so that tiny glass or plastic fragments can be seen. The mat should also be resistant to chemical spills because the fiber optic cables do chemicals in them. Never pick up fiber optic fragments with your fingers because they will get embedded into your fingers. Use tape to pick up small fragments and dispose of them properly. Use a disposable container, such as a plastic bottle, with a screw-on lid to store fiber fragments. Close the lid tightly before disposing of the container. And only transition should cut or trim fiber optic cable. This is not something we'll generally be doing, but we should know how to safely do it in case we have to advise others or in case for some reason we are doing this. Any questions on the dangers of working with fiber optic cables?
Actually, I do have one.
You go ahead, Matt.
Fiber optic cable, you say it's a light, but, and it's not visible to the naked eye. So would that make it like an infrared type light, or?
Yes, it's infrared, and the wavelength is usually 750 nanometers. It's basically, for single mode fiber, you're looking at an infrared laser. And for multi-mode fiber, you're looking at an infrared LED. They use infrared because it travels down glass more efficiently than visible light and has a better refractivity index.
I have an example for you of some fiber optic light cabling, Mark, and because I know you've seen this. Okay, in the Pepsi building in the playroom, there are those long strands with the colored lights on them. Those are fiber optic cables.
Although you can see those.
Yeah, well, they're just using a different frequency of light, but you often see them. The same principle applies for some of these Christmas decorations and small, put on the top of your television set, Christmas trees and things.
Yep, those are the fiber optic lights.
Okay, I get it now.
So what she's trying to say is that the same principle that you could see in the visible light in the playroom is exactly the same technology or principle that's been applied here in fiber optics.
It's just at a different frequency.
That's right.
Correct, yep.
I'm not eligible to get DSL from Verizon because I'm too far from the central office where all the wiring is. And they told me once they finished the fiber optic that I would be eligible. I guess there's a difference between the induction of a fiber optic as opposed to a copper wire?
Yeah, two different technologies.
Basically, with fiber, as you would well know, Bob, because you're a bit of a ham amateur, I believe, you would be familiar with attenuation of electromagnetic waves over copper. Basically, if you're more than, say, 2 to 3 kilometers from the exchange, the attenuation gets to the point where the noise floor becomes too high and you can't retrieve that RF signal off the copper lines. Single mode fiber, which uses lasers, can actually be run in special circumstances, sometimes 10, 20 and 30 kilometers before you need a repeater. So what they do is they run fiber close to your house. In some very specialized circumstances, they actually run fiber into your house, but generally they run fiber to the end of the street, and then the last mile is just copper from the end of your street to the local D-SLAM to your house. So that's how they get around that.
The Fios network is very nice, actually.
Roger. Okay, thanks.
So it's two completely different technologies. The one has your copper cabling all the way from the DSLAM to your... The other one has it fiber optic cable almost to your house, and then the last bit is the copper cabling.
There is attenuation on fiber. Always keep that in mind. It's just that you can run fiber longer distances than a lot of the old copper. Because a lot of the old copper that's lying in the streets is 20, 30, 40 years old, and it was never originally designed to carry ADSL signals. So, and the phone companies don't want to replace it. They'd rather just put fiber in because it's just easier.
Okay, I'm still waiting.
Well, they're really working on it pretty hard, so you'll probably get it fairly soon.
That's what my brother-in-law has been doing for Verizon for the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, they're really pushing it, though. It's pretty cool. I had it in America, and it was pretty sweet, yeah.
I got a Verizon.
I bet you're going
through
bandwidth withdrawal right now, aren't you?
40 gigs is actually more data than you'd think on a 512 connection.
You'd be surprised that, and I'm not going to elaborate too much because I'm sure we'll all get my meaning. If you use your internet connection for legal means, 40 gig is quite a lot of data. It's only when you decide to pull all of your TV programs from questionable sources that you start seeing 40 gig is not enough bandwidth.
Okay, any more questions on working with fiber optic cable? Again, we really probably would not be doing this.
Yeah, I'm good for now.
Cool. All right, we'll go on to copper cabling, which is slightly more likely that we'll be working with. And if you have friends that do any of this, you might see if they can get a piece of copper cabling that nobody's using anymore and demonstrate to you how crimping copper cabling is done. We do have a lab where some of the students did this that you can listen to. And I think that's in Discovery 1.
I'll find that actual audio and I'll post it to the list. In fact, the CCNA version that we did in 2007 has Geraldine and Graham singing the colour song.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, they're all sitting there going, green, white, green. Anyway, etc. So, yeah,
it's orange, white, bro. So here's some precautions to take when doing your copper cabling. When cutting your copper cabling, the strands can puncture your skin or cut you. Also, the cutting small pieces of the cable can fly through the air. So read the documentation for any tools you use, as they can be dangerous. I think this goes for all tools, besides a screwdriver, unless you don't know how to use it. Then, hey, if you don't know how to use a screwdriver, read the documentation.
They can be dangerous too. For example, if you're trying to unsocket a processor and you've put all of your weight on the screwdriver and it flies out, that can actually be quite dangerous too.
Oh, it can be quite dangerous. I was saying, read the documentation on all your tools besides the screwdriver if you're sure we know how to use screwdrivers.
Also, one other little point, stripping the cable with your teeth is not allowed. Do use the stripping tools.
Somebody did that?
Most technicians do when the boss isn't looking, because it is actually easier to feel where the, at least, you sort of, you know, nibble through the insulation. Yeah, it is. But as far as this course is concerned, none of our students would be seen doing that, especially if they're doing their Cisco exams or the Cisco people are watching. So, yeah, just be careful of that, guys. But, yeah, people do strip cable with their teeth because you can actually sort of bite through until you feel the copper and then slide the plastic along the off the end of the copper.
But, oh. Yeah.
Never.
Right. Not with the computer components, but I've actually done that a few times.
You know, I think most of us use our teeth and tongues for stuff as blind people, and that's probably okay, but not according to the quiz and the notes and all that.
And not at work. I mean, people say things, you're sticking things in your mouth, they're not going to be too happy. So try and keep things out of your mouth, unless it's, you know, you know what you're doing and it's your own stuff, so, okay.
Remember that copper cabling conducts electricity. An equipment fault, static electricity, or lightning can energize even a disconnected cable. If in doubt, test the cable you're working on with a simple voltage detector before touching it. Just make sure that cable's unplugged, and probably don't work on your cables when there's a huge lightning storm. Use common sense.
Unless you want to charge out of life.
Okay, that's it for the warnings and cautions on working with cables. Does anyone have any questions on working with cables before we go into network design? Okay. We want to design a network based on what, do you guys think?
Number of computers?
More general than that.
Size of the building?
Even more general than that. There's one thing we want to design our network based on above all else.
Sorry, guys, I've got no idea either.
Probably customers' needs.
Customers' needs is right.
We want to design... Too long, haven't I?
Yes, we want to design a network, not on what we think we design our network to, not on what we think the customer wants, but on the customer's actual needs. So a network works best if it is designed to meet the needs of the customers. Building a network requires analysis of the environment and an understanding of networking options. Before you start building the internet, the network, you should interview the customer as well as any other people involved in the project. It is important to have a general idea about the hardware and software that will be used on the network. You should inquire about future growth of the company and the network because this helps in determining the network topology. Does anyone remember what the topology of a network means?
Is that the architect of the network?
Topology always refers to heights and distances, from the server to the clients or whatever.
Yeah, it's the overall physical and logical designs of the networks. So it's the how that network's going to look and be laid out physically and logically.
And I think Bob's hitting the nail on the head as well with topology. I think the word comes from is if you're looking down on it, as if you were looking on down onto a topographical map of the land. So we're looking at the physical layer as seen from above.
Absolutely. That's how I usually think of a network topology, from top down.
Well, that's how everybody does, because the word top is in there.
Okay, so the very first thing you have to discuss with your customer is the type of media that they're going to want to use. Either wiring, which is the type of wiring that you're going to use, or if it's going to be a wireless network. So remember, this is in your test as well, expandability of the network and the number of locations of users will be the main factor in deciding the topology of your network. It can be helpful to create a checklist of the customer's needs to help you remember. Remember, there are two types of topologies, your physical, how the network is physically laid out, and your logical, how data and protocols flow through the network. It's important to conduct a site survey of the area where the network is going to be built. A site survey is a physical inspection of the building to help determine the layout. You should find out where the user's workstations will be, where to position the network equipment such as switches and routers, and where servers will be located. These servers could be in with the network equipment these decisions are based on security, electricity availability, of space, and air conditioning. Why air conditioning, guys?
Keep the equipment cool.
You don't want the system to overheat.
Absolutely.
Or freeze.
That'd be also a good...
If it's air conditioning... in Australia means both hot and cold, so it means... Yeah, it did.
It means heating and cooling was the end of that
cooling.
Sentence. Yeah.
Okay. A floor plan of the building can help a lot. If this is not available, drawing a picture is a good idea if you can do that. You may really want to go and inspect the building and understand what the building actually looks like to help. Okay, can anyone, we're going to review types of topologies. Can anyone name any topologies for me? Physical topologies and logical topologies?
Grace, I think your mic's not adjusted right. You're dropping out at the end of each sentence.
Yeah, see what I can do.
We're just lengthen that delay trying to adjust.
Anyone give us examples of topology while she's doing that? That's
Dawn.
How many floors are in a building?
No, network topologies we want, sorry. Examples of the different types of network topologies. We have star.
Mesh, extensor, ring.
Yep. There's another one that's a bit like the things that drive down your street.
That we used to use a few years ago with coax. What is it? I don't believe I have too many
okay, hopefully this will be better.
For my research.
What's this?
Oh, I've just been doing a bit of research on Phoenix, and the lack of buses in Phoenix isn't as prolific as, say, Perth and Melbourne, but that's another story. But bus is the answer that people are looking for. Bus topology, guys.
All right, perfect. This should be much better. I raised up my amplification. Am I any louder?
You are, but the amplification doesn't stop you from dropping out, so we'll see how you go. That only just amplifies you. It doesn't actually affect the sensitivity. So let's see how we go.
Okay. So we've got types of topologies. It is important to decide on a suitable equipment for the network. This includes cables, network cards, switches, routers, and connections to the internet. Most modern networks are made up of twisted pair copper cabling. Cat5e is the most common type of cabling today. If a network requires high bandwidth, it might require Cat6 or Cat6a cabling. Cat6a cabling can provide speeds up to 10 GB. Remember that the maximum length of an unshielded twisted pair cabling is... Any ideas?
300 feet?
Approximately, yes, or 100 meters. It's actually 330 feet, and I'm only asking you guys these types of questions because they are in the test. So, yeah. Well, I shouldn't be clipping as bad anymore.
No, your vox is hanging up at the end just right.
Oh, good. Okay. New or renovated office buildings often have some type of untwisted cabling that connect every office to a central point called the main distribution facility. A repeater may be needed for workstations that are too far away from this main central point. So you can use a hub, or you can purchase a repeater so that all of your machines can make it over to that central point. You need to make sure that you consider the cost and the future growth with your customer. You may want them, or they may want to buy a Cat6 or Cat6A cables for future growth. This can save them time and money in the future. Installing cabling is expensive once. After that, it is usually inexpensive to maintain. The equipment for wireless is usually more expensive to buy and maintain, but there are less installation costs because you don't have to run wires. Security is another very important thing to consider. A wired network is usually more secure than a wireless network. The cables in a wired network are usually installed in the walls and ceiling and therefore not easily accessible. Wireless is easier to eavesdrop. The signals are available to anyone who has a receiver. To make a wireless network as secure as a wired network requires the use of encryption. So, the wired network is usually much more secure, and nobody can walk off with your router. If you've got a wireless router, you want to, or any kind of router, make sure to lock it up. Make sure to design for future growth, as I said. Buying higher grades of cable equipment may save your customer time and money in the future. So you want to tell them that as nicely as you can. If they're not interested in the growth and building for the future, we don't want to force them to do it. You just want to tell them nicely that it's a good idea. But if they don't want to, it's the customer's needs and wishes that come first. Because in designing and all that, the customer is always right, even when they're not. Wireless can be a solution for buildings that either should not or cannot have wired networks. An example of this would be a historical building where it is illegal to make modifications, such as an old historic house that you run for tours and you want to have internet to check people in or want to run a website through that old house for touring. Any other ideas of where a wireless network might be better?
Building with concrete floors.
Yes, that's true.
Absolutely.
Rented accommodation where you may not want to go drilling holes in the place.
Okay. Yep, that's a good one.
And also on a site where you may have a lot of people coming and going, for example, a company that has consultants or sales staff who come in and out and want to get on the network quickly and easily, and you don't know, you may have a varying number of users. So, yeah, there's plenty of opportunity for wireless.
Just shift nice and close to that microphone, if you can, unless you're a little bit quiet.
At the moment.
What about a combination?
You can do that too. A lot of offices do that. We do it here.
And I do it here.
At the moment, the car wash that I work at in Edgerton, my boss, is looking at, I guess, the corporate office, his bosses. They're trying to set up a video feed so if something goes wrong, someone in corporate can look at the problem and actually see it. And he was just testing out a camera with 100-foot cabling, and he's like, eventually they want to put a wireless camera that they can just take out anywhere around the building and do that.
And that would probably be a very good idea for a car wash.
I don't think I want to have someone looking at something in one of the bays after it's been used or something with a wire dragging along, no.
Yeah, that'd look kind of weird. And also, that wire is going to fatigue rather quickly, don't you think?
Especially in the wintertime, yeah.
Oh, the salt and snow? It'll be awesome. Okay, for an in-depth discussion... For a really in-depth discussion of cable types, if you don't remember what each cable type is and does and all that, go back to Chapter 8 and check it out. If anyone has any specific questions on cable types, feel free to ask now. Okay, I'm guessing we're all good. If the network needs to be connected to the internet, an ISP needs to be chosen. Things to consider are speed, availability, reliability, and cost. We're going to quickly go over the different types of service that an ISP may provide to you. You've got POTS, plain old telephone system. This is a dial-up connection. It is extremely slow, but it is available wherever a telephone is present. It uses a modem and a telephone line to transmit and receive data. Next step up is an ISDN. The Integrated Services Digital Network offers faster connection times and has faster speeds than the dial-up and allows multiple devices to share a single telephone line. ISDN is very reliable because it uses the plain old telephone line. ISDN is available in most places where the telephone company supports digital signaling. We've got DSL, Digital Subscriber Line. Like ISDN, it allows multiple devices to share a single telephone line. DSL is always on, and the speeds are generally higher than DSL. DSL allows the...
The speeds are generally higher than ISDN?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
DSL allows the use of high bandwidth applications or multiple users to share the same connection to the internet. In most cases, the copper wires are already in your home or business, and they're capable of carrying signals needed for DSL communications. There are some limitations to DSL technology. The DSL service is not available everywhere, and it works better and faster the closer you are to the telephone provider's central office, or the DSLAM. Also, DSL is much faster when receiving data over the internet than it is when sending it, generally, although this is more symmetric connections are becoming available. And in some cases, the lines that you have are technically not good enough to carry signals, so you want to get your lines checked in a business if you're thinking of having...
One of the interesting things, we missed your last word, which was service. One of the interesting things that's worth mentioning is that in Australia, for a line to qualify for DSL, it must only be able to carry a megabit per second. So all of you gamers that want 24 meg ADSL 2+, you're out of luck because the telco won't give it to you because to qualify for DSL, it's only going to be a megabit connection.
So you really want to get your lines checked and find out about how your line can actually carry before you go invest in your DSL. We've got cable. The cable internet connection does not use a telephone line. It uses coaxial cable lines that are designed to carry TV. Cable offers high speed and an always-on connection, just like DSL, which means that even when the connection is not in use, of course, you are still connected to the internet. Many cable companies offer telephone services while using VoIP. Because cable television reaches many homes and businesses, it is an alternative for people unable to receive DSL services. Theoretically, the bandwidth of cable is higher than DSL, but it can be affected by limitations of the cable provider. Most homes that have cable televisions have the options to install high-speed internet service. For those people in rural areas, we have satellite. Satellite internet connections provide a high-speed connection that is always on. A satellite dish is used to transmit and receive signals to and from a satellite that relays these signals back to a service provider. The cost of installation and the monthly service fees are much higher than those for DSL and cable subscribers, so this is really kind of a last resort if you can't get anything. Heavy storm conditions can degrade the quality of the connection between the users of the satellite or the satellite to the provider, slowing down or even disconnecting the connection. So, in most cases, the service provider provides you a dial-up connection as a backup. In Australia, it seems that most DSL providers do this as well.
You also get satellite in Australia in rural areas as well.
We have wireless, which Amanda was trying to use earlier. There are many types of internet services available. The same companies that offer cellular service may offer internet services. PCMCIA and PCI cards are used to connect a computer to the internet. The service is not available in all areas. All devices on the network need a network interface. And you have USB dongles, as we said earlier.
Also, we spoke to the internet people at IINet, and they said that it won't be another, it'll probably be another 3 to 5 years before you'll see huge rollout of wireless internet services on a large scale, because the current infrastructure just couldn't handle the demand that people would place, given the contention and stuff required for wireless connections.
I know.
Any question? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know when I had Verizon, and I believe US Cellular also does it too, they had, on Verizon it was VCast. I believe US Cellular, it's their Easy Edge option, is their internet equivalents or whatever. And of course you pay extra for it, but yeah. And where I live, Verizon doesn't, I can't get the Verizon VCast functions to work on the phone. I don't know why, but whatever.
Probably because you're out in Edgerton, but yeah.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't work, but it, when we go into Janesville or Madison, it works.
As you said, it's only available in certain areas. Any questions on the different types of internet services that can be provided to your customers? Okay, so once you've researched the heck out of your ISP, decided which one's going to be good for you, you've checked your lines and or cable connections to make sure that it'll fly on your network, got that all done, you can think about your equipment. Internet service provider may sell you routers or modems at a discounted rate when you sign up with them, or you may be able to rent. You've got to think about the technical expertise of the people who will be running the network, as well as total cost of ownership. It may be cheaper for you to buy the device outright. It's going to be a one-time expense. But it'll be cheaper. You won't be paying the internet service provider to rent it. On the other hand, you have, if you rent it, if anything happens to that piece of equipment, if there's a fault, if there's a piece of equipment that needs to be upgraded, usually the internet service provider will take care of that for you, and they will maintain and manage your equipment. So if your customer does not feel comfortable maintaining those routers or modems, you may want to rent from the ISP. Okay, we are going to talk about network interfaces for our workstations. Network interfaces are for desktop computers are either integrated into the motherboard or are on an expansion card that can fit into an expansion slot. Most laptop network interfaces are either integrated into the motherboard or fit into the PC card or ExpressBus expansion slot. USB network adapters plug into any available USB port and can be used with both desktops and laptops. Make sure your NIC is the proper form factor for the slot that you want to put it into. It is best to get an NIC that is compatible with the highest speed that your switches or routers are capable of, because one slow network interface can slow the network down to that speed. So if you've got gigabit internet and you have a computer with a 100 megabit network interface, your whole network may be slowed down to that 100 megabits. Any questions on that?
I'm good.
Cool. Make sure any wireless cards are compatible with the wireless network that they are going to be connected to. If you've gotten a network, try and get N wireless cards if you can. If you're going to be using PDAs, make sure your network is running in mixed mode so that you can get to that lower, they may just only run G, or they some of them even only do B networking. So make sure that your network is compatible with all of your devices and that all of your devices are compatible with your network, and your network will run relatively smoothly. Okay, we're going to do a quick review of network devices. Hubs, I pretty much think of them as multi-port repeaters. They send the signal out and repeat it to every port on that hub except the one it's come out of. You can use hubs as repeaters if you need to get signal farther. We've got our switches, and those are smart. They use the MAC address of each workstation to figure out where a packet is going. But they're only in network. Your routers route your information between networks. If you want more information on the switches, hubs, and routers, do listen to Chapter 8 again, because we did go into that in depth. And if you have any questions about network devices, feel free to ask now. Okay, I guess we're good.
That's tempo on this thing, Greg.
Perfect. Go ahead.
I have a Linksys router at my house, and if I'm remembering correctly, Carrie was saying that it is possible to expand a network so I can, you know, plug in more computers if I have to, right off of my order. Router for my internet. If I'm reading it correctly, that would be I could just plug in and that wireless Linksys router, and that would be essentially expanding my network?
You'd have to do some configuration with the firewalls and DHCP servers to make only one firewall and one DHCP server active. But you can do that. I have had a setup where I had two routers and a switch before.
I may be calling yours.
You might want to bring your audio up a bit, Mark.
There we go. How's that?
Much better.
I may be calling on you at some point then, someday.
That's all good. That's just fine. It's definitely doable. That's what it's for. You just have to know which settings you want to work with and which one you want to be your primary DHCP and firewall and all that good stuff. I learned a lot about that last year. Okay, so next we need to select the protocols for the networks. Keep in mind that some network protocols are proprietary and only work on specific equipment, while others are open. Here's a brief overview of four protocols that you may encounter. The TCP/IP suite of protocols is required for every device to connect to the internet. This makes it the preferred protocol for networking. it's really the most popular protocol nowadays, and you will very rarely run into some of these other ones. The next most likely one that you will run into is NetBuoy. It is a small, fast protocol that is useful in low-security networks. NetBuoy performs well in a small network that is not connected to the Internet. It is easy to install and requires no configuration. However, NetBuoy can cause unnecessary traffic on a large network, so it is not a good choice if there will be network growth or if you want to connect to the Internet. We have IPS XPX. It's a protocol that belonged to older versions of Novell NetWare. Because of the growth of the Internet, newer versions of Novell NetWare use TCP/IP. In the fourth one we have is AppleTalk, and Apple Macintosh abandoned this protocol for the TCP/IP suite of protocols to ensure connectivity with other TCP/IP networks, most notably the Internet. So now we've planned our network. Next week we'll talk about implementing it. That's where we'll end today, because I'm sure everybody has lots to do for their Thanksgiving, and family to see, and people to interact with. So do we have any questions?
I have a general question not related to the topic. I'll wait to ask the class to ask it.
Sounds good. Wait till everybody's asked their regular questions. Okay, if nobody has any questions, I have one announcement. It's Thanksgiving. If you guys are thankful for the Cisco Academy, please show up Monday night at approximately 6:30 Central Time, 6:45, somewhere in there. We are having someone come to do funding, who may fund us. Please show up. Put your best, shiny, bright student faces on. Tell them how much, if you've had fun in these classes and if you've learned something. It'd be really, really great if people could show up, because if we don't get funding, we may not be here.
Yeah, this is real death knell stuff, actually. So if you can be with us, we would greatly appreciate it. And it says, Grace said, no funding, no more classes.
Urgent, right?
Yes, please, please, please be here.
And say nice things.
You'll be asked to introduce yourself if you can, and to classes you're involved in, and that'll probably be about it. You won't be grilled or anything, I don't believe, but just come and smile and all that.
No, we've done these things before. No one grills you. It's safe.
Nah.
Now, wait a minute. This is a holiday season. I always say bah humbug.
Please don't.
Bob?
Yeah, well, it'll be bah humbug to everybody if we don't get funding.
We have four PCs in here, which...
And I
haven't
had enough.
Yep, we have people for those. Go ahead.
Okay, one of our students was asking about activating exams. I've just done them all again while Grace has been speaking. All exams, I've just logged out, but including the ones when the chapters we're not doing, are there for that person who asked earlier. So all exams are now active for another week as of this time now.
Thank you, Elise.
I was just about to make a bonanza joke, but I don't think anybody's old enough to get it. I was going to go, whoa, little Joe, you can go and do your exams now, but it's probably a few years out of...
I'm old enough.
Which chapters are we not doing?
You are not doing 11, 13, and 14. But you are welcome to do those worksheets. Please do if you can. We'll grade them.
Do we still need to take the test at Cisco?
No, not those chapters.
You're welcome to.
You can if you like. We have one student here who's pretty gung-ho to do that. If they choose to do that, that's great. We're not going to stop people from doing that. But if you elect not to, you don't have to. They are chapters 11 and 13 and 14. All other chapters you're required to do. Some chapters like 10 and 9 and 10 and 15 and 16 have not only their respective module exams, but they also have a joint 9/10 and 15/16, if I remember correctly.
That's right, getting you ready for the exams.
So
I think that's
so
the
just
point
be mindful
is
of those, gang.
You don't have to do them, but a lot of it is rehash of what's in the previous chapter. So, for example, the printer module is just a rehash of what was in the printer module. And a lot of people might enjoy doing the bench tech ones. You might actually get more out of it if you do them, if you choose to do that. They will not affect your grade book if you bomb them, so don't worry. You can do them and bomb them, and we will not laugh and point, we promise.
Actual fact, it's probably a really good thing to do.
Yeah, I did them, and I was glad I did them. You get more feedback, you get more chances at the Cisco exams before your finals, you get the worksheets, you get our feedback, and you just get the experience of doing it, which is really valuable.
And a warm, fuzzy feeling inside from studying with a Cisco Academy for the Vision Impaired.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving. Have some pumpkin pie for me.
And to you too, Bob.